Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Friday, May 28th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast, Prices Up, Savings Down. The U.S. PCE inflation came in above market forecast, personal consumption expenditures. Core PCE prices in the U.S., which exclude volatile, as they like to put it, volatile food and energy costs, increased by 3.1% year over year in the month of April, following an upwardly revised 1.9% gain in the month of March, besting market expectations for a gain of 2.9%. This is the highest rate we have seen since the 1990s and well above the Fed's target rate of 2%. The PCE is what the Federal Reserve likes to look at. Now, we talk about CPI coming out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The PCE is calculated by the Bureau of Economic Analysis, a division of the Department of Commerce. Nonetheless, it all points to the same direction. Inflation is here. As far as I'm concerned, it is structural, meaning it is going to be with us for years to come. Now, the Federal Reserve's 2% inflation target, it's made up. They're pulling a number out of the hat. They think 2%, well, it's not too bad. People can tolerate a 2% haircut every day, or every year, excuse me. Because, again, as I stated yesterday in yesterday's podcast, Debt Distorts Reality, people don't fully understand what inflation is. They hear the word, they say, well, it's inflation, maybe it's a good thing you're inflating balloons, you're having a birthday party, whatever. But if you looked at it, what it really is, and devaluing currency, destroying your purchasing power, if you put it in those terms, which is what it really is, I think people would look at it much more differently. So when the Fed comes out and says, well, we are willing to tolerate 2%, who's we? Because I don't think it's the vast majority of people in this country, especially the significant portion who are living paycheck to paycheck. So they make this stuff up. Now, the Fed has a dual mandate of price stability and full employment. Well, if you're going to have price stability, then your target should be zero. It shouldn't be 2%. Even 1% would be more stable than 2%. So they're just pulling this number out of thin air to make it seem like, well, it's something we can tolerate. As more and more wealth is stolen, because that's what inflation is. And it's a tax. It's a tax that we do not vote on, which makes it highly destructive. And I think inflation is more destructive than direct taxation, because at least you can have a bigger say in direct taxation by going to your politicians and complaining about this, that, or the other, or advocating for one point or another. We don't have much of a say at all as to what the Federal Reserve does. They're unelected, they're unaccountable. This is a system of checks and balances, yet this group that controls our money supply isn't held accountable for anything. And in fact, politicians love them. And when members of the Fed go and testify, particularly just the Federal Reserve chair, because that's his role, but he gets praised by these politicians, Democrats and Republicans alike. Why? Because there's really no difference between the two-party system, folks. Have you picked up that this is just a big game? It's just a big mirage, just a big facade. That's all it is. It's smoke and mirrors. Are there some differences? Yes, of course there are. Do people within both parties have different opinions on some social and cultural issues? Yeah, of course. But that's what they want you to they want to distract us on those issues. They don't want you paying attention to the financial mess that they have created and continue to run, which is really destroying us. Because if you had a sound economy, people would ignore most of this noise that comes from the media and politicians. All of this blah, blah, blah about this issue or this social issue or this cultural issue, you wouldn't have any time for it. You couldn't care less about it if you had a strong, vibrant economy, because none of it would make any sense. It wouldn't be worth your time. But because this country and so many others are on the planet, unfortunately, are crumbling or on the verge of crumbling, yeah, every little thing is going to get a lot of attention and be another point of frustration and stress for a lot of people, unfortunately. But you have to keep your eye on the bigger picture. As far as I'm concerned, that's the economic piece of the pie. because it still brings us into that intersection of economics, politics, and social issues, which are going to be heating up. And I have some other news on the geopolitical front with respect to Tunisia, and we'll get to that momentarily as well. But we have their PCE figure above market expectations. We'll get to that report here momentarily as well. And also related to some market performance headlines, we have tin, the tin man, surging to a 10-year high. Tin prices are above the $30,500 level, a level that has not been seen since 2011. And isn't it funny how so many commodity prices, one after the next, is either at an all-time high or is nearing an all-time high, and a lot of those prices were put in 2011. And 2011 is an important year to remember, geopolitically speaking as well, because this was the start of the Arab Spring. And that's why I'm going to talk about Tunisia here as well, because that was really the country that kick-started a lot of it too. In 2011 was only a couple of years after central banks implemented quantitative easing. Now, it started here in the United States. Other central banks eventually caught on and started doing the same thing. But it started here in the States during the Great Financial Crisis. This time around, however, because it was the playbook, it was in everybody's playbook, they all jumped on it at the same time. So you saw what occurred only a couple years after quantitative easing. You saw inflation take off. Of course, we're told that there was none, but then why would you have the Arab Spring and so many other protests taking place around the world? Because you had higher food prices, higher energy prices. You had countries that were still destabilized and weakening across the board. Well, now, when we look at economic data, when we look at monetary measures, quantitative easing is just exponentially worse, more devastating and damaging this time around than it was during the Great Financial Crisis. And then we were told it was going to be temporary. This was just an emergency policy that is just going to, you know, smooth out the edges a little bit. We're just going to run this for a couple years, maybe, see how it works, and then we're just going to remove ourselves and back to normal we go. Well, we've been doing this for over a decade, okay? And we're putting the pedal to the metal. So if those policies eventually led to all of this destabilization around the world, what do you think is going to happen this time when it's a factor worse this time around? You don't have to do the complex math. You don't have to do deep economic analysis on this. This is all common sense. Just like it was common sense to know that the policies that they implemented during and after the Great Financial Crisis were not solutions at all. Because we had a debt crisis, and they attempted to solve it by adding even more debt. We have another debt crisis, and they're adding even more levels of debt onto the system. It doesn't work. It kicks the can down the road. It benefits some way more than it benefits others. And in fact, it's really devastating and destructive to the vast majority of people on the planet. And that's another reason why we will continue to see more and more political instability. We will continue to see more and more protests, riots, revolutions, and coups. Because people understand, they may not understand all of the details, all the mechanics behind it, but they understand that something's not right. And a lot of young people know that they're the ones that are going to have to pay this bill. And they don't want to. Because, in all honesty, younger people are not responsible for this mess. Yet they're the ones that are going to have to pay for it and clean it up. And that gives a lot of opportunity if we should adopt the right policies to truly correct it. But I am greatly concerned that a lot of young people are not going to adopt the policies that can truly correct this mess. It'll end up being more of the same. They'll just think that they're younger, they got the fresh ideas, but they're going to continue with socialistic policies or just sort of a command and control economy. But they'll think they can do it. They can't, because this it's just the system that they're adopting. It does not work. All right. So some market performance to see how we closed the week and really the month here in the States. It's going to be a holiday weekend, so you'll probably catch me back here on Tuesday of next week, unless something should break over the weekend, then I'll do an episode. But the Forex markets were relatively muted. We have the dollar index at 90.06, in the U.S. dollar continues to weaken against the Chinese yuan, losing about 0.33% on the day. Bitcoin is trading at $35,800 a coin, so continuing its downward trajectory for the time being. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up 0.33%. The S&P 500 closed up about 0.1%, and the NASDAQ 100 closed up about 0.25% to close the week. Mixed bag across the pond in Europe, but mostly in the green, the one exception being the UK exchange, but that was relatively flat, but slightly in the red. And on the commodity front, we have WTI at $66.32, a barrel Brent at $69.65, so once again, knocking on that 70 handle once again. Natural gas, $3.01, gasoline, $2.13, and we anticipate higher gas prices here in the States due to the long holiday weekend. Gold, $1,903 an ounce, so it was able to close the week and the month above 1900, a level that we have been monitoring here closely at the Capital News and looks like a very bullish sign as far as we are concerned. Silver, $27.94, right on the cusp of 28. I'll call that a win for sure, and I see a lot of upside to both gold and silver because they are sniffing out all of this inflation, all of the geopolitical risks. And this ain't their first rodeo. And I don't think a lot of these risks have been appropriately built into the pricing that we see in equity markets right now. And I think just gold and silver are ahead of the curve because they've been with it. They have seen this game before. That's our opportunity to get ahead of the curve, to get ahead of the crowd if we can. Now, I could be wrong. Make no mistake about that. But when it comes down to the options as to where you can start investing your money, I think it's a sound place to do it. It's definitely not in the crypto space. Now, if you want to speculate, that's a different song and dance. Your money, your risk, good luck to you. But cryptocurrencies have not been tested. They have not proven the test of time. Gold and silver have. That's why I believe in them. That's why I believe in commodities. And you have to look for deep-seated value companies that got a lot of cash on their balance sheet, have a good business model, and are offering goods or services that are basically recession-proof. Those are the areas you want to look at this juncture, because the risk-reward profile from sticking with these high-tech flyers, you know, these high-flying tech stocks, to me, it's not worth it. It's just not worth it at this point. If you were in them, I'm sure you've made a good amount of money. Start considering taking some profits and reallocating your funds. Copper, $4.67 a pound. Lumber, $1,310 per 1,000 linear board feet. And to round it out, Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note, 1.58%. So it continues to be range-bound over the past couple of months. Now moving onward to the Bureau of Economic Analysis report here. Personal income and outlays for April of 2021. Personal income decreased $3.21 trillion or 13.1% in April, according to estimates released today by the BEA. Disposable personal income, or DPI, decreased by $3.22 trillion or 14.6%, and personal consumption expenditures, PCE, increased $80.3 billion or 0.5%. Continuing on with the decrease in personal income in April primarily reflected a decrease in government social benefits. Well, who would have thunk that? Within government social benefits, other social benefits, as it's classified in the report, decreased as economic impact payments made to individuals from the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 continued, but at a lower level than in March. No stimulus checks. Unemployment insurance also decreased, led by decreases in payments from the Pandemic Unemployment Compensation Program. So what a mystery, folks. Uncle Sam stops sending stimulus checks and income drops. Wait till we get to personal savings. The $80.3 billion increase in the current dollar PCE in April reflected an increase of $112.6 billion in spending for services that was partly offset by a $32.3 billion decrease in spending for goods. Within services, the largest contributors to the increase were spending for recreation services and for food services and accommodations. No surprise there. Economy's opening up. The weather's getting nicer. People want to go out. Within goods, a decrease in non-durable goods was partly offset by an increase in durable goods. Within non-durable goods, the decrease was widespread and led by food and beverages. Within durable goods, the increase was accounted for by an increase in motor vehicles and parts. Motor vehicles, once again, I think a report just recently came out hitting, again, new records for the price of a new vehicle and how much people are spending. I think it's $35,000. So that just keeps going up, up in a way. So again, as soon as you get that funny money from Uncle Sam, you think it's a gift, boom, it just goes right into the product away. You give it away as soon as you get it. But people can't figure this out. A lot of people actually think this is a gift. They think it's free. And boy, oh boy, are they going to be in for a rude awakening. Personal outlays increased $82.8 billion in April. Personal savings was $2.81 trillion in April. And the personal saving rate, personal savings as a percentage of disposable personal income, was at 14.9%. In March, it was 27.7%. Again, this month, April, 14.9%. So almost a 50% decrease in 1 month's time. Now, 14.9% from historical standards is still high. But that's because, again, Uncle Sam keeps giving us money. This is completely unsustainable. And people continue to make the argument on financial media stations that this is good. Then why did it take so long to figure this out? I don't get it. Printing presses have been around for a long time. Why did it take so long to figure it out that all we have to do is print money and it's only good? There are no negative consequences to this whatsoever. Why did it take so long? The answer is obvious, because it isn't good. Yet people don't care, or they don't know, and they just want to talk their book. They just want to make their commissions, and that's the end of the story. As long as their account goes up, they couldn't care less. At what expense? Who gets hurt? All right, so that's a huge drop in personal savings. And it's likely going to continue in that trajectory. Unless, of course, Uncle Sam comes up with another stimulus check, and I wouldn't be surprised if they pull one out somewhere down the line. The PCE price index increased 3.6% in April from 1 year ago, reflecting increases in both goods and services. Energy prices increased by 24.8%, while food prices increased by 0.9%. Excluding food and energy, the PCE price index increased 3.1% in April from 1 year ago. Again, above Federal Reserve's target of 3.1%, or excuse me, 2%. Again, an arbitrary figure, but they're perfectly fine allowing inflation to run a little hot because they continue to make the argument that it's only going to be transitory. And they also continue to make the argument that inflation was so low for so long, it was below 2% for so long, that it's okay if it runs hotter than 2% for a little while because it'll sort of balance itself out. It'll be symmetrical. Again, they're making this stuff up. You're not going to find these shenanigans in any economic textbook anywhere unless they just put one out discussing this. Okay? Because it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. They're making it up. It's all about the narrative. It's all about instilling confidence to continue running their con game. That's all it is. They are running out of time. Period. End of story. So that's why we are going to continue to see a lot of stories in the media that maybe have been suppressed, and they were suppressed last year, as we discussed earlier this week as well. When it comes to COVID-19, when it comes to the origination, did it come out of Wuhan? Was it China's fault? Did they know about it? Did they do it intentionally? Was it a mistake, but they still attempted to cover it up? Can we continue to have a working relationship with the Chinese, that being the U.S. economy, the European economy, basically the rest of the globe? Can they continue doing business with China? If they can't, what do you think is going to happen to the markets? Oh, well, this has nothing to do with fiscal policy. This has nothing to do with monetary policy. So politicians and central bankers are off the hook. It was China's fault if the market should collapse and all hell break loose. Then you have Bill Gates, Dr. Fauci, Jeffrey Epstein. All these stories coming around. It's not a coincidence. Now, it's all speculation on my part as to what it actually all going to mean, but these are things to think about, because we know for certainty that no politician or central banker is going to come out and admit that they made a mistake. They're not going to take any responsibility. They're not going to act like a leader. We know that's not going to happen, but we know they'll squeal like pigs, and we know they'll blame other people and entities. So I'm just trying to connect the dots with the information that I'm seeing here. And again, agree, disagree. If you have another theory, send it to me. I'll be happy to share it with the audience. So the information around Tunisia, this is out of the Middle East Eye, okay? Tunisia, the president denies coup, a coup plan after days of speculation. Kais Saied confirms authenticity of a document revealed by MEE, again, Middle East Eye, suggesting plan for constitutional dictatorship, but denies endorsing it. Tunisia's president has denied he was planning a coup in the country after Middle East Eye published a document purporting to show how to undertake a power grab. Kais Saied has confirmed the authenticity of the document in a video released by his office. According to another news organization, during a conversation with the prime minister and the defense minister on Wednesday, Saied said the document was sent to him, but questioned why he was blamed for its contents. Quote, "You receive a letter, and suddenly you are the one to blame. This world makes no sense," he said. Continuing, he says, "Once you receive the letter, you are automatically blamed without any consideration for your response to it." The document outlined plans to lure Saied's political rivals to the presidential palace and announce the coup in their presence while not allowing them to leave. Other top politicians and businessmen would be simultaneously arrested. The plan was contained in a document passed to MME labeled "Absolutely Top Secret" and dated the 13th of May. Addressed to Saied's chief of staff, it outlined how the president would enact a chapter of the Constitution which, under a national emergency, would give him complete control of the state. A constitutional dictatorship, perhaps. Under the plan leaked from his office, the president would call an urgent meeting of the National Security Council at his palace in Carthage. Under the guise of the pandemic, the security situation, and the state of the country's public finances, which are in ruin. Saied would then undertake a number of arrests and declare a constitutional dictatorship, which the authors of the document say is a tool for concentrating all powers in the hand of the president of the republic. Labeling the situation a national emergency, the document states, in such a situation, it is the role of the president of the republic to combine all powers in his grip so as for him to become the center of authority that enables him to exclusively hold all authorities that empower him. The document continues, this is from the president. He says, "We are on the verge of establishing a ministry for leaks," because I guess leaking documents has been a problem within the Tunisian government as of late. But nonetheless, this is not going to get mainstream media attention, and I don't expect it to. Tunisia is a small country, but this is just more evidence in the thesis and the theory that we have been arguing here at the Capital News for the past couple of years. This is picking up momentum. It's those weaker countries. They are on the verge of financial ruin as well in Tunisia. They are in desperate need of about $4 billion from the IMF to stay afloat. Now, $4 billion is chump change. I mean, hell, Janet Yellen gave $650 billion, U.S. taxpayer money, to the IMF to bail out other countries. $650 billion. Don't forget about that. She couldn't show up to a small business hearing in Congress, but she can give away $650 billion, no questions asked. Tunisia, again, almost kickstarted the Arab Spring a decade ago. So don't think that just because a country is small, it doesn't have the ability to spark a fire, to start a global movement. This was a question we asked in a podcast a couple of weeks ago, right? Is social unrest contagious? The answer is yes. It doesn't take that much. People are paycheck to paycheck. People are struggling. People are dealing with the pandemic. People are sick. People are dealing with the pressures of having to not only raise their kids, but also now teaching their kids because of the school situations, depending where you are. There's a lot of stress on a lot of people around the globe is the point I'm trying to drive home. It doesn't take that much to break at this juncture. So just be mindful of these stories. Look them up. Add them to your pile. That's what I try to do because it's one after the next. It's the weakest links that are going to break first naturally. It is making its way into more developed nations. We already see it. We saw it in 2019. And the reason we saw it in 2019 is because the global economy was weakening then. This was not the greatest economy ever known to man in this country just because we had a president and his lackeys out there on a day-by-day basis saying it. Okay? You want to run multi-trillion dollar deficits, you can kick the can down the road until you can't. All right? That's all it is. And as I predicted a couple years ago, once you start running those deficits, guess what? Your taxes are going to go up too. And now that's what we're going to deal with. So we got to deal with the inflation tax. We're going to have to deal with increases in direct taxation. We got everything coming at the same time because everybody wants to feel good today. They don't care about the long term as much as everybody says they do. They couldn't give a damn. It's all about feeling good right now, today. They say they care about their children. No, you don't. You definitely don't care about their financial situation and their future opportunities because they've just been stolen. That's debt distorting reality. Just like debt distorting reality, another point is the savings rate. That's not from production. That's not from people working. In fact, it's because people aren't working. Uncle Sam thinks, oh, well, we got to give them the money to prevent revolution here, to prevent protests and riots here. We can get away with this nonsense because we're such a large economy. Other countries can't pull this crap off. But that's another debt-distorting reality metric right there. I mean, there's so many to choose from, but the savings rate. If you had that type of savings, this would be a strong, vibrant economy that came from production, that came from capital investment and expenditure, that increased productivity, generated more innovation, bringing costs down, allowing people to make more money, because once productivity increases, wages are supposed to increase with it. And when you have gains to productivity and innovation, costs come down. Wages up, costs come down, you have more savings. That's a vibrant economy, not because the printing press is turned on and Uncle Sam sends you the money. It's not how it works. And so when the rude awakening occurs, and it will, it's just going to floor people because they don't even know what's coming. But you do. So stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News and enjoy your long holiday weekend here in the States.